Hey there, it's Carolyn. Before we start today's podcast, I wanted to tell you about a brand new challenge that we have starting over in the Homestead Kitchen membership really soon. This one is all about making your very own herbal oils and culinary oils and cosmetic oils and turning them into salves and balms for your herbal medicine cabinet. If you're interested in joining me for the Herbal Oils and Salves Challenge, then go to homesteadingfamily.com/podcast-herbal-oils. Again, that's homesteadingfamily.com/podcast-herbal-oils.
Hey, you guys, this is Josh.
And Carolyn.
With Homesteading Family, and welcome to this week's episode of the Pantry Chat Food for Thought.
This week, we're talking about the top 12 herbs, medicinal herbs, that you should know about that might be just wild in your backyard or in the area around you. So we're covering foraging the top 12 herbs.
And a lot of these are just about everywhere. You don't necessarily even have to be out in the country for all of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really good. You know, we've talked a lot about gardening and about growing your own. We've talked about growing your own medicinal herbs and your own food. But foraging adds a whole nother element into it, and that is that you don't have to do the work of the propagating and the growing, right? It's just there, and it's kind of waiting for you. So it's just getting to know what resources you have in your environment that are out there waiting for you to need them when you get ill. Yeah. Or when you want to reach a better level of health or whatever it is.
And some of these herbs are just powerful. They're created to mine nutrient and some of the things out of the earth that help them do their job very specifically. So we'll look forward to getting to that. But first of all, got to cover a little chit-chat and some questions.
All right.
So what's going on with you?
Oh, well, it is spring around here, so there is a lot happening. There's a lot of gardening. There's a lot of transplanting. There's a lot of seed starting. There's all sorts of things going on. But one special project that I have been doing that I like to do this time of year because, you know, we go from being kind of fairly sedentary in the household during the winter, you know, not completely, but still, we're not out with big equipment. We're not doing the amount of things. But then we hit warm weather and it's like all of a sudden the equipment comes out. You know, kids have got weed whackers and nippers and all these different tools and different things going on. So I like to look at our first aid kit around the house and make sure that we are really well stocked up. So we've been doing a supply like check on that and we've been ordering some things. I like to have those you know, we always called them vet bandage. I don't know, or vet wrap, because I grew up around animals. So
I don't know what the human term for that is. Yeah.
But the wrap that sticks to itself to wrap up any wounds or anything.
Stabilize a sprain or something.
So that, gauze pads, just all the sorts of things that you might need. And while my mind has been on doing this, have you guys seen the amount of shortages, pharmaceutical shortages that are happening right now? Especially in antibiotics. And so I was already thinking about stocking up on things and started seeing news articles on the different shortages that have been out there. And I am really excited because, now you guys know we're not like super big pharmaceutical people, but I do think that especially antibiotics have their place. Like when you need them, you need them, right?
They have their place, right? When it comes to emergency first aid or even some long-term prepping for medical, dealing with medical things if you can't get somewhere quickly.
So I got really excited when I found that you can get home kits of backup antibiotics, like for your family. And these are real, you know, straight from a pharmacy, medical grade, like antibiotics. We're not talking fish antibiotics, right? That's what a lot of preppers talk about is like getting your fish antibiotics. These are like full on antibiotics with a complete user's guide. And I got really excited to be able to just have these on hand in case there was an emergency. And here we are in the middle of nowhere. You know, you can't get to the pharmacy, you can't get to a doctor, you can't get different places. And so, anyways, this made me really excited that they're called the Jace case, and you can get this for your whole family. They also have kid kits, like pediatric kits for kids and the common things you might need for kids. So anyways, I wanted to share that with you because I'm really excited to be able to have these on hand. I don't plan on using them. I hope not to use them. But in case I needed them, they're here. So check out the Jay's Case if you're interested in doing something like that. I'll put a link below. And hey, maybe I can get us a discount code for everybody, because that would be kind of cool. But it's a good thing to have on hand and just be prepared for an emergency in case it happens.
So are those just medicines? Is Jay's Case all medicine?
Yeah, it is. To what I can see, it's all pharmaceutical type medicines, but you can get, like, if you're on other.
That's what I was leading to, is besides like some just generic backups of you know, different things, can you get stocked up, or can you work with them to get ahead on if you do have some prescription stuff that you have to have?
Yes, they will get you whole backup supplies, it looks like. Cool. We don't really have anything like that, so I didn't look into it that much. I know you can get things like prescriptions for ivermectin and other things like that can be a little bit harder to get. So anyways,
no good.
Pretty cool to have that opportunity to get that. So
good. It's always good to be deepening our preps. Mm-hmm. While we're not preppers, we do strive to live prepared in all areas of life. So
yeah, and to be able to help ourselves and others in the case of an emergency.
Cool. So, what else? Anything else?
Gardening, lots of gardening. We're trying to keep up with the spring grass that likes to show up in the cottage garden, and pulling out all the grass before it gets to taking over. If we catch up with it in the spring, then it doesn't become a huge problem the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So what about you?
Very cool.
What have you been up to?
Well, getting ready for the grass to grow, actually, out in the pasture. I stepped into the garden, the main crop garden, and it's started cleaning up a little bit.
Yep.
But the grass is what gets going first. And so we're actually just getting ready to spread manure from the deep bedding in the barn and manure the pasture and get up some of our seasonal temporary fencing and get ready to get animals out to pasture once the grass gets up enough. So
I say grass
focus.
And I kind of like grrr, like not yeah, looking forward
you,
to it. You say grass and your eyes light up.
You got to not be dissing the grass so much. It provides us with probably 50% of our food.
Yeah.
We are a largely grass-based system. But
where the grass shows
up. You want grass some places. You don't want it other places. You don't want it in the cottage garden nor the main crop garden, which it's not a struggle there. We've conquered it in the main crop.
Yeah.
But no, we do want to encourage the grass out in the pasture, right? For all of our dairy meat products. So anyways, it's all about getting ready for that. And it's just that cusp of like, here it comes. And all of a sudden we're going to go from sitting still to walking a little faster to probably all the way to full out sprint.
Yeah.
Without anything
the spring
in between.
Sprint.
So kind of getting ready for that. Yeah. And excited for it. It's nice to be seeing a little more sunshine, a little more warmer days. And always excited to get some animals out to pasture. And we've been working on clearing the next bench up on our property.
Yay. More pasture.
That's a lot of work. Going to take quite a while, but starting to work on thinking about clearing that area, getting trees down, and how we're going to solve that.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah,
it's exciting to see it move forward.
Yep.
Well, today's Pantry Chat is brought to you, sponsored by Layman's. Which we're just so excited about, because this is a company we have purchased from
for
20 years.
Forever. As long, yeah.
For as long
probably
as
before we would have, well, I would definitely say before we would have ever said we were homesteading.
Oh, yeah. I don't even
before we knew to
term.
Even call it homesteading, what we were doing.
Yeah.
So you've been bringing things in from Layman's.
What are some of the things that we've purchased from Layman's in the past? And I thought, okay, we've definitely gotten oil lamps from them. We've gotten Grannyware dishes for like camping or when we lived in a small cabin that was kind of like camping.
Canning supplies, particularly lids. They're
yes.
one of the best sources, especially for USA made lids.
Yep, definitely. Yep. Let's see, we've gotten cedars from them and tools from them.
Mm-hmm.
We've got
various
multiple tools.
Yeah, we have a nice grain mill. I didn't even know we've unboxed.
Right.
Somewhere that I got when I was there.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we've gotten all sorts of great, it's a backup grain mill. It's a hand crank one instead of my electric one, which I do plan on continuing to use my electric one while I have electricity, but
absolutely.
It's good to have a backup. So we're really excited to have them as sponsors and think you should go check them out if you're not aware of them, because they have so many great tools that are all geared towards more of an off-grid, non-electrical life. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Lots of fun stuff.
Real good. And they keep growing and adding new things. So it's not all I mean, it's all kind of old-fashioned, but there is a lot there for the modern homesteading
life. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool.
Oh, and we do have a coupon code for you guys, 15% off your order at Layman's. That is 1FH5CT. Wow.
We'll get that in the notes for you so you can just copy and paste. That'll make that a little easier.
All right. Good.
Okay, a couple questions of the day.
Okay.
I've got one here for you I didn't catch. We have a couple options.
Okay, take your pick.
Okay. So Nicole Briceno asks from the Can I Ferment That video. Fermented foods are definitely an acquired taste, and I'm new to ferments and struggling to get my family to eat them, let alone enjoy them. We understand. Any advice?
Actually, I do have a lot of advice. One good piece that I think has been really helpful for us back in the days, let me give you a little encouragement first. Once people start eating fermented foods, at some point you get over the taste and your body starts to crave them, and the whole scenario flips, and before long your kids are begging you for more sauerkraut on the table. That is what now happens in our house, though. We'll go through a half-gallon jar of sauerkraut if I open it up and let people take servings out of it in like no time flat, like one meal. So you do have to just kind of break through this initial wall of taste barrier, because it's a different flavor than we're used to in our modern palate. So some ways of doing that. One, you can do things that are naturally sweeter. Think of beets or carrots, and don't let them ferment as long.
Yeah.
It may not be ideal on the health side, but it will start helping your family adjust to the flavor and get those good probiotics at a low level in. And then you can start fermenting them longer before you put them in the refrigerator or into cold storage. The other thing that has been really, really big for us is getting one, like I take people's dinner fork and we fill it up with one forkful of a ferment, and that forkful gets set on their plate, and before they can use that fork for anything else, they have to put that bite in their mouth. So just one bite, and one bite is like more than any capsule you will ever get filled with probiotics and enzymes. So it's really, really powerful. You don't need more than that. But just have that filled already. So that has to go in their mouth before they get to start using their fork to eating their food.
Yeah.
So that just helps us like remember to do it and get it in our mouth, even if we're kind of going, I don't really want to take this. You have to before you get to eat your food. So.
And if you have a husband that you're having a hard time telling him he has to, try the carrots. Carrots are what won me over early on in the journey. The carrots in the early to mid stages are like, they're like candy to me. Really, really
good. Very
good. So just kind of got to find the thing that resonates with people.
Yeah.
And I think like Carolyn said, starting out with them, giving them to them a little early in the ferment, they're maybe not as ferment-rich, probiotic-rich, but they're good. The carrots are excellent.
Yeah, very good. Okay, let's see. A question for you from Trisha on the no barn smell equals healthy management system. Okay, Josh's barn management.
Title.
Yeah, it was. Do you have multiple pig species? I know the Cooney Cooney you have are non-rooting. Do they turn the deep bedding over for you, or do you have to have a different breed for your rooting?
That is a great question. Yeah. So we are utilizing two different species. We're raising the Cooney Coonies on farm, breeding them, and so they're kind of our permanent staple here. But no, they don't root, and so they do not turn the deep bedding.
Mm-hmm.
So we buy a couple of feeder pigs every year and turn them out. We've got them right now. They're little babies. They're in one of the stalls, and here within the next couple of weeks, the animals will start to move out of the barn, and those pigs will start to move around the stalls and start to turn the bedding.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really want to raise those pigs, so we just buy a couple for that system. Now, for a lot of you that don't want to raise pigs, and I wouldn't go into like raising and breeding pigs quickly, just buying feeders is a great way to go no matter what, and it's great for the deep bedding system, and then you don't have to carry the pigs over the winter.
Yeah.
So,
good thought.
That'd be a great way to go. Yeah, you bet.
Cool.
All right.
Diving into the main topic today.
All right. So, medicinal herbs, primarily here is what we're talking about, that you can forage or should be able to forage somewhere in your area, even if you don't have an herb garden yet or anything like that.
So, of course, we have to start with all the legal stuff. We're not doctors. We're not anything certified. This is not meant as medical advice. It's more talking about what you can do or what has been done with herbs in the past is probably the thing to say. And helping you to know about some herbs that you should get to know. But as always, it's really important that you do your own research and make sure that things are right for you. Some of these herbs do have contraindications with pharmaceuticals. So please be careful. Be especially careful. If you are nursing or pregnant, you always want to look into things. And there are great sources out there that tell you about the safety of herbs. In fact, I have a whole training that tells you how to know if herbs are right for you. I'll try and put that link down in the description for you too. The other thing is that if you are interested in the sources and our citations for this and where we're getting our knowledge from, check out the attached blog post because we have links for you.
Cool. All right. Well, we got a few to get to.
Yeah, we better just dive right in.
Let's dive in. I'll bring them out and you tell everybody about them.
Okay.
One of the most ubiquitous ones that you can find just about anywhere with the little asterisk that I'm going to have, but dandelion.
Dandelions. Yeah, you guys, if you don't know about dandelions, this is one that you should add to your herbal studies for this year. Because, yeah, they're everywhere, right? But they are incredibly powerful on the herbal side. They are hepatic, which means they have a liver support to them. They're choleretic, which means that they increase your bile production. So right there, and they're diuretic, and they can have a laxative effect. So right there, that's going to tell you right away that this is going to help tone up your system, and it's going to help you get rid of waste and toxins, right? So this is going to help you with digestion. It's going to help you with your hormone function because your liver, as it helps your liver, it's going to help your liver detox the excess hormones that are in your body. So it's going to help you with a lot of things. So this is an herb that I really recommend you look at, you get to know, and especially it's a great spring herb after we're coming out of winter. And our bodies are kind of sluggish. Maybe we've been eating more preserved foods, not as many fresh foods. Our livers are feeling a little slow and laden from being inside so long. This is a great herb to really get into. Other things that it can do for you, it can remove warts. Just the sap of it applied to warts. If you have children, you know that that comes around regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way.
That is cool.
Yeah, apply it, you know, often until it goes away. It's a tonic, blood purifier, liver cleanser, all of those great things. And it helps with a ton of different things. When you cleanse your liver, you usually cleanse your skin. So those are really, really attached. But also, as you have things that are diuretics and they're helping to cleanse your system, like cleansing your blood and your system, they really help a lot with joint pain. Things like gout or rheumatism or anything like that wrapped up in joint pain. So this is a great herb, and this is why it's one, like, number one on my, they're all great herbs. I love them all, and they're all really useful. But some of the ways that you can use these, you can use them in salads, soups, smoothies, stick them in a blender as greens. You can make a green powder out of the leaves. You can cook them up. You can cook up their roots too, not just their leaves, but you can cook up their roots because there's a lot of medicinal power in the roots themselves. You can make them into teas. I love my dandelion root tea. I have one pretty much every day, most of the time. Definitely if I start noticing any skin problems, I go to once a day for a dandelion root tea. And of course you can tincture them. So.
Very cool. You didn't mention my favorite, which is to fry them in a little, you can make a little batter out of some flour and some milk and fry them in butter or lard. They are, if you like, what's a little fried zucchini or?
Oh yeah, deep fried zucchini.
They're actually better. This is the flower heads, the yellow flower head part in the spring.
Right.
It is so, so good. I feel like we have a video out there somewhere.
We might. We love doing that over the campfire.
Doing that in the spring once a year. We try to do it. I'm thinking just some of the other stuff we've been going through with some of the detoxing and the blood testing we've done.
Yeah.
We ought to hit that hard this year.
That's just a good idea.
With those. Yeah. Now, one caveat to dandelion, though, is a lot of places spray their yards. Mm-hmm. So be careful And just you don't want to take up something that's been sprayed. So I just being knowledgeable.
Probably really good for all of these when it comes to basic foraging. Yeah. And forage off roadsides, like give yourself some room off the roadsides because the toxins from the road itself will go into the ground and get sucked up. Yeah. So,
but your yard, hopefully you're not spraying stuff in your yard anyways. And most people have got grass, have got some dandelions somewhere. And, you know, leave some of them. Leave an area. I know we all want to get them out of our nice yard, but but let them go somewhere and proliferate because they're great. They're enjoyable and, like Carolyn was saying, very good for you. All right.
I would tell you the story about the time I tried to make dandelion wine, but I think we might go too long. So
there's still a few bottles in there. It's not aging all that great.
Don't over add sugar if you try to go that way, but that can be a nice way to get remedies in. In fact, old-fashioned herbal medicine, a lot of times they would use like winemaking, and they would put, they would either infuse the herbs directly into already made wine, or they would make wine from the product itself. So, you know, you think elderberry wine, you think dandelion wine. Those are kind of common.
And I know some of you don't drink alcohol, but you got to remember this is a long-term preservative that even people that don't generally drink alcohol use to preserve because it's one of the best ways to preserve some of these things for the long term and not have it deteriorate on you. So just consider the value of it if you're thinking about wanting to preserve it because obviously dandelions are around for a certain part of the season.
Yeah. Definitely.
Moving on, we got a lot to cover here,
so we
better keep moving through them if we're going to get people the information. Nettle, and I assume we're talking the wild nettle, which I would refer to as stinging nettle. Is that accurate, or are there? I don't know of another nettle wild besides stinging nettle.
Stinging nettle is definitely what we're talking about here. And the parts that we use for stinging nettle are either the roots, you can use the roots, but more commonly you use the leaves and the stems or all the aerial parts for that. So kind of common to, or similar to the dandelion, nettle's a diuretic and an antioxidant, which means that it is also doing that kind of cleansing for your joints. So it's really good for joint problems. It has a really interesting property, though, that we don't see a whole lot in herbs, and that's an
pulmonary? Is that what you're getting to now?
Anti-proliferative. It's just hard to make it roll off the tongue.
Yeah.
Which means that it actually stops cell division and growth. So if you have a wound, that's not a good thing, right? You want the growth. Mm-hmm. If you have something like a tumor, then that's a great thing. Mm. You don't want that to grow and spread. And so in its place, it's really good when it comes to certain topical issues like that. But it is very, very anti-inflammatory. And by being anti-inflammatory, it creates some pain relief when you have, you know, some topical, especially pain. So this is another one of those herbs. It is extremely nutritive, which means it just has a huge amount of nutrition packed into it. What we like to use it for, what we use it for every single year in our house, is seasonal allergies. Mixing a combination of nettle with alfalfa, and we take it in capsules, can really, really help with the seasonal allergies. Yeah. So we have a couple kids who just take a lot of that every single year, and it really helps.
My understanding with the nettle, too, it's one of those herbs that you can take all year round.
Yes, it's a tonic
and take
herb.
A pretty decent amount of. So if you regularly struggle, or you just want to get in the habit of taking it to be ahead of seasonal allergies, and or even helps with cold preventative and whatnot, it's one of those things that a lot of herbs you don't want to take constantly.
Right.
It's one of those herbs that you can take constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that nutritive power in it, of it just having so much nutritional power in there, you want to take it regularly. So it can be a really good thing. Again, there are times where you don't want to take nettle. So make sure you're doing your own research to make sure it fits for you and for any conditions you might have. You can make nettle into just like a potter of like spinach. You can put it into a tincture. You can put it into teas. You can put it into capsules. You can kind of do smoothies. Like, you can do all sorts of things with it. It will not sting you once you do something to it, like cook it or blend it or something like that. So don't worry about that part.
I'm just having fun remembering. It's one of the earliest herbs that you and I probably played around with early together, way before we were married, probably 25 years ago.
Probably.
Foraging it and experimenting with cooking. And, it wasn't all over YouTube or anything. It was like in a book or two.
Yeah.
So it was pretty novel at the time. It's just fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Herb number three. Again, another one that is nettle's maybe not as ubiquitous as a dandelion. It's around, but this one is pretty close, and that's plantain.
Mm-hmm.
Comes in different sizes and forms a little bit, but it is just about everywhere.
Yeah, you have the narrow leaf and the broad leaf, and we will have the Latin names for you in the blog post also, so you can check out there if you have any confusion as to what we're talking about. But plantain is a great herb to have around, and you probably have it out. Even if you live in the city, you probably have it in the sidewalk cracks or something. Not that you should harvest it there unless that's your only option, but it grows everywhere. And the parts that you really use mostly are the leaves. You can use all parts of the plantain, including the seeds and the roots. So it's entirely edible. You can just take the whole thing and throw it into a blender if you want. But plantain is very astringent, which means it tightens up puffy, inflamed tissue. So if you think of like a wound, and you know you get that red as everything is
irritated and
everything's
inflamed.
So if you get that on there, it's going to help to tighten that up and reduce that inflammation. If you think of a sore throat, that's another place where that can be really helpful. What's really cool about it, though, is that it's antibacterial. It's actually, in general, antimicrobial. So it's actually really strong for those things. It's anti-inflammatory. So not only does it help reduce the puffiness and reduce the water filling up an area, but it also takes the inflammation out of the area. And it's also demulcent, which means that it soothes mucous membranes. So, I mean, you can just see right here, like, this is an amazing herb for wounds of any sort. The other thing that it really does is it helps pull out any debris or foreign substance that is inside your body or your skin. So if you have a splinter, you have an insect bite, you have anything like that, plantain is just amazing for it. Yeah.
This is a great one to teach your kids because for like insect bites, stings or little splinters, different things, right? Kids get these things all the time outside. And so if you can teach your kids how to just go find plantain, and our kids will do this. They'll just go and have a little something. They just go find it and chew it up a little bit and put it on there.
Right.
And poultice it, and it can calm, especially those bites and stings, calm it down.
It is usually
quickly
the first herb that they learn how to forage for themselves in our house, because it's really easy to identify, and it does not have any close lookalikes or anything like that. So
right.
And it's everywhere, so it's a great herb to get to know.
Very cool.
There you go.
I like it.
All
okay,
right.
Here's one I know zero about here. Not that I know much about any of them. She's the resident expert here, but cleavers.
So cleavers, also known as goosegrass, it might be one that you don't just like know off the top of your head, but as soon as you see it, you'll be like, oh, that's that plant that's always
that
grabbing me, or, you know, it's kind of obnoxious.
Cleaving?
Cleaving
the,
to you,
the,
yeah. It's got these little hooked hairs on it that just kind of like grab you. And it is important to note right at the top when we're talking about cleavers, it can topically cause a reaction for some people, so you do need to be careful when you're gathering it. If you don't know if you have a problem with it or not, you might want to use gloves or just put a little bit of sap on some skin, a small spot, just to see. So just be aware of that. But the action for cleavers, it's really anti-inflammatory. It's also cooling and cleansing. It's got some strong detoxifying powers to it, and it's also a diuretic. Where it really, really, really comes in handy is, again, wounds. So it's a place where it just really helps to speed the healing, clean out any toxins that could be getting into the area, and create a real anti-inflammatory response, which is great to have. There are some other uses. It's diuretic, so it can be really good to reduce, you know, if you're having bladder infections or any problems like that, or you're having too much liquid, you know, in your body, your body's just holding on to too much. It can be great for that. Usually those diuretics are also really good for joints if you're having joint pain, skin issues, eczema. This is great because it's a great anti-inflammatory. And so it really helps to calm down skin issues. It's also known to help with hair growth. If you need hair growth, I don't know. I haven't tried it, but it might be worth trying. And you can use it in all different ways. Teas, infusions, tinctures. You can use it
fresh
as poultices. You can juice it.
I don't know about
use
that.
It as fresh juice or add it to things. Some people say it's good as a coffee substitute.
I'm telling you right now, don't touch my coffee. don't even experiment.
It's not going to happen here. So if you try it, let us know. Okay, now this herb is kind of a cool one.
Sheep sorrel.
So wow. Any of you guys, this is not talked about a whole lot in the herbal world, except for in one place, and that is in Essiac tea. So if any of you guys have heard about Essiac tea, you know, that it runs in the cancer circles, sometimes the autism circles. It is a traditional tea that has been around for a long time, and sheep sorrel is one of the main ingredients in that tea, and it is everywhere. It is in the grass. It is all over the place. It's another one of those things that you don't really notice, but it is all over the place.
Okay.
It's really strongly antioxidant. It's really strongly diuretic, and so it really creates this great detox situation where it really helps to detox the body. It helps with chronic bowel issues, which feeds right into the detoxing side, right? Gets everything working and functioning correctly, which, you know, we know that detoxing is an important part of any sort of bigger treatment for things like cancer or anything like that. So it kind of just really feeds into that really well. It is so strongly antioxidant that it's really good for, like, your immune system also. If you're struggling, if you're sick and you have some viral, like, you know, dead things coming off of viruses, you're trying to detox your lymph and all of that, that antioxidant property can go through your body and help to reduce any of that free radical damage that could be happening. So,
very cool.
Yeah, it's really good.
How do you take it?
How do you take it? Tinctures. You know, most of these things, it's like you need to get it as close to your ailing tissue as possible. So if you have to take it internally, it's tea, tincture, eat the thing, powder it and take it by the spoonful, or mix it into applesauce. They're kind of generally the same. If you want to put it on topically, then an infusion or mashing it up and sticking it right on there in kind of a really simple poultice is a great way to go.
Cool. All right, here's another one that is very, very ubiquitous everywhere, and that is clover.
Clover, yeah.
Yeah, there are over 250 varieties of clover.
And they are all medicinal.
They're all good for you.
Yeah, they have different properties, so sometimes one will be a little stronger in things like white clover versus red clover. There's something called zigzag clover. We don't have a lot of it here, but that's another really common clover. I think that's more common in Europe. Excuse me. Clover is a great thing to help, again, detox your body systems, but we're really talking about blood here.
Yeah.
It's going to help detox the blood, which is really important if you're dealing with ongoing health problems. Again, if you've been sick, if you have skin issues, if you have any odd symptom that you're like, gosh, I just don't know what this is, but it's kind of weird and it shows up here and there. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that means you're struggling with something that's toxifying your system and you need to get that out. And so that is where clover really, really comes into play. But also another really one, here's a fancy word for you. It's anti-scrofulous.
Anti-scrofulous.
That means, you know, when you're sick and your lymph glands swell a whole lot, it's going to help drain that. It's
going to
help get
that.
That's your
scrofula.
You have scrofula when you have these swollen lymph glands, and it's going to help to drain that and move everything out. So especially at the end of an illness, if you have a bunch of viral stuff, leftovers that you're trying to deal with and your body's trying to deal with it, bacterial is where it really does well, is bacterial, not viral, then that's going to help you to get through it, move it on, clean your body up so you can get over that kind of sluggish or that part where you might like get sick right again if you do too much. That's me. So that's a really helpful herb for that. And again, you take it in all the different ways. Put it in, it actually tastes pretty good. So you can put it right in teas. You can throw it in your morning smoothie and blend it up. You can take it in powdered form. All of those different things.
Right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, moving along, we have another one that's generally, well known these days, I think, but mullein.
Mullein, yeah.
Mullein.
Yeah, it's kind of gotten more popular in the last couple of years, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, what mullein is really well known for its respiratory effects, right? It's very anti-inflammatory. It is very anti-spasmodic, which means, you know, you get those, like, reactive coughs, like you can't stop coughing.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of spasming. Your muscles are spasming in your lungs are spasming. Mullein is a great herb to calm that down. It's also, though, very antiseptic and antimicrobial. So you'll also see remedies for ear infections containing mullein flower, mullein blossom that has been soaked in oil, usually. Sometimes it's in alcohol, so that's really good. And it's pain relieving. So it goes really, really well in that ear when you have an owie ear, an ear infection.
An owie ear.
That's mama talk coming out. So that can be a really great thing to have. And it is everywhere. It grows all over the place. As soon as you know what it is, you're going to see it all over. And you can use the leaves, you can use the blossoms, you can use the seed heads when they're dry and it's the middle of winter and you're sick and you have nothing else. You can actually use those too. So it's a great herb to know about.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff here.
A lot of good stuff. I'm trying to go quickly because we still
have quite a few more. No, there's a lot here. We could
dive
into each of them.
I know. But, we could do a pantry
I don't know that we have to get through all of them. It's okay. These are a lot of good things for people to think about. Let's talk about St. John's wort, another one that is pretty accessible and, and easy to find.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people know this one because of depression, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an actual depression or it's a seasonal affectation disorder where you're getting to the middle of winter and you feel a little moody and blues, or the end of winter, that's when we struggle with
it. Boy, I might need a little more of that.
Yeah.
I definitely get moody at the end of February, and, and it's a grouchy bear for me.
Yeah, that does happen.
You need to give me a little St. John's wort,
we need to
apparently.
Give you some of this, yeah. So it is great, though, and where it really shines when it comes to home herbalism, aside from making your husband not so grumpy, is as a nervine, which means that if you're having any nerve pain, it can really help to soothe that.
Yeah,
so that's really important. This is something I always put into things like ear oils for dealing with ear infections. It's very effective. You can also put it in things like burn salves for topical use on a burn, but anywhere where you're having major nerve reactions, it's really good to have. It also does help to heal wounds a little bit, so it's great to have in any wound preparations that you make. So this is one of those real first aid type herbs that is good to have around because, you know, those things hurt. And it's good to tell the nerves on a wound to calm down, or an infection, or anything that you have going on that the symptom is presenting with pain.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does help with the healing, but it helps you to deal with it. It also can help calm you down a little bit if you're, you know, you have a child who's maybe really upset about something with getting hurt. So cramps, another place that it really helps. If you have a lot of cramping, rheumatism, things like that is a great way to go.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk
about? Trying to not, like, leave out the most important parts, but still keep moving. So remedies, you can take it topically. You can take it internally. It is one that I want to say make sure you really do your research on, especially if you're using it for depression issues, because it definitely interacts with antidepressants. There you go. Thank you. But you can, you know, infuse it in oils. You can make tinctures out of it. You can make it into dried, you know, leaves that you can put into teas. You can make powders out of it. You can do all these different things with it. The part that you usually use are the closed, before they open, blossoms.
Get
a little bit of stem, but it's really important you get them before they blossom. They're little yellow flowers, but if you harvest them at the right time, then when you push your fingernail into that blossom, it should bleed red, and it is significantly red. It is like burgundy red. So when you have a great infusion or oil preparation of St. John's wort, it should turn bright red.
Wow.
which is kind of interesting from a yellow flower.
Sure.
If you wait too long, that property is gone and you're losing the medicinal qualities of your herb. So if you get to the plant and you're like, yeah, it's all open, you're not going to have as strong of a,
good
of
to
a
know.
Preparation. Yeah.
Yep. Very good. All right. Moving on to good old pine. Pine is on the list. Don't tend to think of pine as an herb, yeah, but it is very useful.
Well, and it's so great because so many of us have pine all around us.
Yeah.
So it's pretty impressive. The best pine to use medicinally if you have pine around is usually considered the white pine. There are some of the tropical pines you do not want to use. They are very, very toxic.
Yeah.
So no tropical pines without doing lots of research. But if you have white pines around,
and I think a lot of if you don't have white pine, you might have a sugar pine, especially in the west.
Yeah.
And I think sugar pine is a part of that family.
Yeah.
The white pine.
You can generally use pretty much all pines though, as long as they're the non-tropical kinds. So you know, if you don't have these varieties, that's okay. You probably have something that you can use. Pine has started to come to public attention a little bit more post-COVID because it has the quality of being incredibly antiviral. What it actually does, the action that it takes, is it stops the virus from being able to enter your cell and take over your cell, which is how viruses work. Mm-hmm. They go in, they take over your cell, they use your cell's own manufacturing plant to manufacture more of them, and then they destroy the cell after they've kind of gotten its their use out of it. And so what it actually does is it tells your body not to allow that virus into the cells. So this is great because not all antiviral things work this way. Sometimes they work after your the viruses have already taken over your cells. Mm-hmm. So if you can get to a virus before it has taken over your whole body, pine can stop it in its tracks.
Wow.
And I've actually had that happen quite a few times this year now, where I'll take pine remedy, I start going, oh, I don't feel real well, and I take it, and within 20 minutes, I feel totally better. It is absolutely amazing. Yeah. So this is something that's really good to look into, especially this you know, new COVID era that we live in, because it's very effective against COVID. So if people have it around you, you know, it's a good thing to start getting into your system right away.
Yeah, I've seen people in our house more and more just making tea straight from pine needles.
Absolutely. So aside from that, it's antioxidant. It has huge amounts of vitamin C, so it's really good. You know, those are kind of the top things. So that's what I use it for and what we keep it around. You can make tinctures out of it. Our favorite is a tincture with a little bit of spices in it to make it taste a little bit better, because it tastes like you're sucking on a Christmas tree. It really does. It is not pleasant. So little spices and a little sweetener. So that would be considered a liqueur. But you can definitely make it into tea. You know, you can dry it. You can do all sorts of things with it. But it's a really good one to have around.
Very, very cool. All right. Number 10 probably might be a good one to wind down on.
Okay.
But
stop at 10.
We'll stop at 10. We could just go on. This is thick.
So I'll tell you, number 10 is birch. Number 11 is burdock.
But you've got one here and you're looking for.
Number 12 is chickweed. And I got to cover chickweed because it's so amazing. And it's this most, like, it's available when nothing else is. This winter, we had the snow actually recede at some point, and there was chickweed growing under the snow here in North Idaho.
It
was like growing happily, looked totally healthy. We just need to wash the mud off of it, and you could totally use it. And so it's another herb that's like, get to know this herb because it's out in your yard and it's waiting for you. Mm. Not only is it medicinal, but it's also good, really good for food use. You can use it as a green, so it's a good foraging herb. This is an herb that is really demulcent, which again means it helps when you have irritated mucous membranes. Mm. So think sinuses, think throat, think mouth problems, anything like that it can really help with. It's also an expectorant. So if you get the stuff in your lungs and you can't get it out, it's going to help to get that out of your lungs for you without having to cough and hack quite so hard to get it out. It's another really good lymphatic. So it's really good to help drain that lymph system when you need it. And it's anti-inflammatory. So you can see chickweed is going to be good to eat. It's kind of known as a tonic herb. You can take a lot of it and eat it all the time. Put it on your grilled cheese sandwiches. Like, it's great. It's really yummy. It has a nice little lemony zing. You can put it in your smoothies. You can do all these different things, but it's just going to add a ton of nourishment to your body and help soothe your entire system and keep it working well when you take it.
Cool.
Yeah.
That is some good stuff. That's, well, actually 12, but 10 covered.
Yep.
Good herbs that are easy to find.
Yeah.
Pretty easy to use. And, you know, find what you have easily identifiable and pick one or two and start, you know, deep dive in it, learn more about it, and put it to use. That's the best way to get going on this if this is new to you, right, is don't be overwhelmed by the 10. Try to identify a couple here that are easily accessible.
Yeah, and start using them.
Yeah, dive in and start figuring out how to use them, and then you can grow from there.
There is nothing like getting your hands into a project, nothing like experience to really help move you along in your journey. So, yeah, definitely don't just spin out on learning book learning.
Yeah.
All of these.
Yep.
Take a few moments and go find some in your yard and start using them.
Make it doable. Make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, if you want to know about the herbs that you can grow in your yard that you should be considering growing this year, then I'll have a link to you for another video on that for kind of grown medicinal herbs.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Sounds good.
It's been great hanging out with you guys today.
We'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Pantry Chat, Food for Thought. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review.
To view the show notes and any other resources mentioned on this episode, you can learn more at homesteadingfamily.com/podcast.
We'll see you soon.
Goodbye.